This is Tuesday, June 28th, 2016. My name is Bob Wood, and I'm here with Bob Rosenberg, the official scorer for Major League Baseball at Cellular One Field in the south side of Chicago. Bob, this is not the first time you've kept score in a game. How did you get involved, and when did you start?
My first game as official scorer was May 5th, 1987. Sox played the Yankees.
And that's a long time ago. And how did you get involved with scoring for baseball officially?
Well, I used to do stuff for Elias Sports Bureau. And I was in the press box at the time when Paul Jensen, who was a PR guy for the White Sox, asked me if I would like to be official scorer. And I says, yes, because I've been up there most of the time scoring anyway. And I says, sure, fine. So I've been there ever since.
And how many games you've estimated that you've done for baseball?
I would say about 2651.
Over 2,600 ball games.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that anyone has done more than that.
No, when we had a meeting in New York, I talked to some of the scorers, because mostly when the guys who were writers and now aren't and are just scorers, they would only do 20, 30 games a year, when I've been averaging 70, 80 a year.
Now, so, baseball really wasn't how you got started with scoring, was it?
No, it was basketball. When we had the old Chicago Packers from the NBA, I was going to a White Sox game and it was raining, so I stopped up to see how much tickets were. And I had to talk to the guy for about almost 2-3 hours. And they called me back maybe a week later to ask me if I ever kept score of basketball. And I says, yeah, in high school. So they hired me, I did the games for the Packers. Next year they changed their name to the Zephyrs. Then they moved to Baltimore in 63-64. They wanted to know if I wanted to go along. I said, no. I like it here. So when the Bulls were okayed by the NBA to join, I wrote a letter to Dick Klein, who was the original owner. And he saw I had a couple of years experience, and I'm here.
And been doing it ever since.
Ever since.
Now, how many Bulls games have you missed in all those years?
Two.
Just two?
And that was in March 31st and April 2nd, 2000, when I did the opening of the Mets-Cubs series in Tokyo, Japan.
So it was baseball that broke your perfect record in basketball.
Yes, because at that time, it was 1,480 straight games.
1,480.
Up to that time. And if the Bulls only had won 13 games that year, if they were winning like they were the previous years, I may not have gone.
Is it harder to score in basketball or in baseball?
Oh, baseball. Because you got to make the call. And let me tell you, sometimes you take a lot of guff from some of these guys. You know, especially if you call up a base hit when they think it may be an error. And if they score some runs, they're going to complain to pitchers because they want the runs to be unearned.
And is that the toughest call, you think, a hit or an error?
In my book, yes, and maybe a wild pitch or a pass ball.
Now, you mentioned wild pitch. You're kind of famous for that call, aren't you?
Yeah, wild pitch. Because sometimes the ball in front of the plate, I could call it a wild pitch. When I see the replay, wait a minute, it hit his glove. Then it's a pass ball.
Do you ever consult with the catcher to see if it is one or the other, or do catchers ever volunteer to you that?
I've had one or two, Bob, that they thought it shouldn't have been a pass ball on them. Okay. But otherwise, most of the time, no.
You mentioned some of the players giving a hard time about that. Is there much of that, or?
There used to be. Now, with the new CBA contract, managers, coaches, players, and agents complain a lot. And they send it in certain plays. They review it in New York. And then Joe Torre, if he thinks it should be overturned, he overturns it. And we just started that about 5 years ago. Otherwise, whatever we called, that was it. Unless I look at a replay later on and say, oh, I was wrong. I change it.
And how long do you have to do that typically?
You know, I've had times where 2 days, but I tried to do it that night so the writers could get it in their stories.
And can you talk about a couple of times that players have been more verbal than other times at some of your calls?
Well, I had one years ago. Jack McDowell was pitching here for the Sox. And Bernie Williams hit a ball down the first baseline. Frank Thomas picked it up and fell. He didn't fumble the ball. Base hit. And they scored a couple runs. And Jack called me the next day. He says, don't you think Frank should have had an error? I says, why, Jack? He didn't fumble the ball. The grass was wet. He slipped. Another time, it was Bernie Williams again. Hits a ground ball to Graybeck, who rushed in, but he dropped it. But Bernie Williams, I was watching around, was pass first. Boom. They scored a couple runs. Here's McDowell. Oh, I said, come on, Jack. That wasn't an error. That was a hit. He had it beat. Another time, Robin Ventura, Fernandez was pitching, and he thought he shouldn't have gotten an error on a play. And I'm down by the batting cage. He puts his arm around my shoulder. Rosie, you ever play third base? I said, yeah. You want to hit me some grounders? And he thought that it should have been a hit, not an error. But he says, Bob, if you change that to a hit and the runs are earned on Fernandez, don't do it. And they would have been. And he said, don't do it. Don't change it. Where that same day, Boggs had a ground ball hit to him in Boston. Clemens was pitching. And they got, I think, 3 runs. The official score in Boston called it an error. Boggs called down to the official scorer during the game and said, no, that was a hit and not an error. And they took, changed it and took 3. That's the difference between a player who's a team player and the other one was for himself.
And you've seen a lot of players over the course of your career. Are there any standout favorites that you enjoyed watching more than others?
Well, I mean, I saw, you know, Duke Snider play, Stan Musial, Ted Williams, Joe DiMaggio. You know, you go on and on. And Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Duke Snider, Willie Mays. Yeah, my favorite, though, was Billy Pierce and Al Smith from the White Sox.
And why did you like those two more than?
Because Al Smith, I met him, was very nice guy. So was Billy. And I always liked Al Smith. He always came up with a clutch hit when they needed it. He wasn't a 300 hitter, but he was a clutch hitter. And Pierce was a very nice guy, and we'd sit and talk a lot of times.
And, of course, we just lost him this year, and Noel Pappas mm-hmm. as well, yeah, here in Chicago. Both fellows that did so much for the communities, too.
Correct. But even though I do almost half of the Cub games, I'm not a Cub fan.
Well, that's
I'm
the thing
a Sox fan.
You've been a fan before you were official scorer, too.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about growing up and rooting for baseball?
Always. I had season tickets at the White Sox. My dad would not let me go to White Sox Park when I was real small because of the neighborhood at that time. So I had to go to Wrigley, but I wasn't a Cub fan. I always rooted for the Pirates.
And you were, of course, on the north side, too, so to be a Sox fan was
mm-hmm.
a bit unusual. How did that come about?
Well, just that most of the people in my family were Sox fans, and they would come to a lot of Sox games, and I just would get tickets and go, and I became a big Sox fan ever since.
Well, you talked about your first game in 1951. Can you remember more of the details about that?
Yeah, Ted Williams hit a home run in the ninth inning to beat the Sox 3-2.
Ted Williams, now there's another ball player that was fun to watch, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Stan Musial was, Eddie Matthews. There was a lot of them. The player, you imagine what those players would be making today compared to some of the ones we have making money, which they don't deserve.
Now, you talk about making money. Your career in the workforce was pretty limited other than for what you do as a scorekeeper, isn't it?
What do you mean?
This is about all that you do, right? For
right.
Yeah.
So I mean, now, but when I first started, I had a full-time job.
Yeah. But that was what? Maybe a fraction of your career.
Right? Yeah. Right.
So you've been able to make a living at this.
Yes.
Good.
But again, and it was something I wanted to always do.
But it's not just baseball and basketball.
No.
How many sports have you done?
Well, I did basketball, baseball, football, hockey, soccer, and then a couple years ago, the fellow called me when the Shamrocks lacrosse team came, and I says, Connie, because I used to work for him at the Sting, what do I know about lacrosse? Well, what'd you know about soccer when I hired you? I said, okay, you got me. And lacrosse says, not bad. I enjoyed it for the 2 years, you know, they were here.
I didn't hear you mention cricket, though. Have you ever?
No, I never did cricket. Nope. When the Cougars were here, another hockey team, Jordan and Kaiser wanted me to do the Chicago Aces. They had the tennis team. And these guys, I don't know the first thing about tennis. So that one I never got to do.
And how long do you plan to do this, Bob?
Well, you know, Bob, as long as, to me, these aren't stressful jobs, it keeps me busy than sitting at home.
And, of course, you've given up on afternoon games during the week. Only
yes, only because the traffic is very bad here. Wrigley, I don't even work the weekends there unless somebody is sick or can't make it. But here, I will. But during the week, the traffic's too bad for our afternoon games here.
One of the misconceptions about official scorers is that they work for the ball club itself. But that's not the case, is it?
No, it isn't. It's Major League Baseball.
And you are just one of, five official representatives of Major League Baseball at the park with the four umpires. Is that true?
Correct. Well, you know, now, Bob, they have... MLB has the data casters who put the play-by-play in and that stuff. So they're Major League Baseball too. Then the fella here now behind me does the timing of the between innings, and that's Major League Baseball.
That's a big change too, to go to a specific time between
yes.
innings.
Yeah.
And do you think I hear that we'll get away with the intentional walk needing four thrown pitchers in the future?
Well, they should have done that a long time ago. And I think the National League should get the DH. For me, it's easier on a score sheet. And all these flip-flop changes and all that. I think both leagues should have the DH.
Of course, the National League is the only level of baseball without the designated hitter, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all other levels, right? We see that. Can you talk about some of your favorite ball games that you've seen in the past?
Well, I would say one was July 1st, 1990, when the Sox got four runs in the eighth inning with two out and nobody on base, and they were all unearned, and Andy Hawkins pitched a no-hitter against the Sox. They had four runs on no hits. And Andy Hawkins asked me the next day, did I call it a hit and then change? I said, no, Andy. He said, well, the board hit. I said, well, because the guy who was doing the scoreboard, that was his first game, and he thought it was a hit. And he put up hit, and here Merrill Stump is looking at me from the dugout. I says to the PR guy, I says, I didn't make the call. You would have heard me.
And, of course, now Hawkins talked a little bit about how his emotions changed so much in that inning. Thought he lost his no-hitter.
Yeah, which he never did, because I never called it a hit and then changed it to an error.
And now official baseball, though, doesn't recognize that game as a no-hitter.
Which I thought, well, it was Jerry Holzman or someone that, you know, I said, well, wait a minute, Jerry. This team is on the road. The home team is not going to bat in the ninth inning. So I don't think it's fair. He pitched eight innings, a no-hitter. That's an official game. But the Yankees do have it in their media guy with an asterisk that it was a no-hitter.
And how do you feel about the Harvey Haddix game?
Since I was a Pirate fan and I happened to be at that game, that should have been a no-hitter. They should have never taken that one out because you'll never see that happen again. I thought that they got to do something about putting back these games where the visiting pitcher pitched a no-hitter and they took it away because the other team can't bet. And Harvey Haddix should have been credited with a no-hitter for 12, 13 innings.
Of course, this week was the 99th anniversary of the Ernie Shore game. He retired 26 men and a pickoff, and he was not credited officially now with a no-hitter. So.
Now, you know, Bob, there's a rule, and I'm waiting for it to happen in baseball. The guy has a no-hitter in the ninth inning, two out, guy gets hit by a pitch, walk, error. The next batter hits the ball. If it hits the runner is out, but the batter gets a hit and ruins a no-hitter. That's going to happen one day, and that is a bad rule. Why should a batter get credit for a hit that hits the runner when it would have been an easy
out? Or if it hit the second base umpire, too, that would be a base hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm waiting for that day to happen here, and so far it's never happened. That would be a bad way to lose a no-hitter.
Of course, we remember the occasion just a few years back when the call at first base.
Yes. Now, see, there, one of the other umpires should have said something. The second base umpire or something. And I think that was a perfect game.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yes. And I see, that's where the replays now would have caught that. But that was so obvious. The second base umpire should have said something.
Now, you talked about some of the rule changes and, of course, the replay. What is your feeling? Has replay helped the game?
You know, I don't really know because some plays, they still call wrong, even with the replays. You know, yeah, in other ones it's helped, but then it makes the game go longer because some of these, they stand there 3, 4, 5 minutes to look at the play in New York. And I think the other one with the catchers blocking the play, I think that's nonsense. Because one guy got hurt, big deal. But I think they should have never taken that away.
Now, Pete Rose was famous for his collision with Fosse in the All-Star Game, and he was just inducted into the Red Lake Hall of Fame over the weekend. What are your feelings about that?
I think Pete Rose should be inducted in the regular Hall of Fame. As a player, he deserves it, but not about the other. But as a player, he should be in there, in my book. Okay. And I hope eventually he does get in there.
And you talked, too, about some of the rules that, like the scoring on the base hit. Are there other rules that you think are a little bit...
Well, when we had our meeting a couple of years ago, we brought up when a ball's hit in the air and there's 3-4 players that go for it and it doesn't touch anybody, it drops, we thought they should make that a team error. Because the pitcher is the one who's getting blamed if they score. When he shouldn't, on a ball that should have been caught. And so far, they haven't put it in.
So it's not getting the support that it needs yet at this point.
Correct.
But as a scorer, you feel that would be the right call?
Right. I think there should be, in that situation, a team error. This way, the pitcher shouldn't get blamed if they score a run.
Or if two fielders collide would be another example, and they drop the ball.
Yeah, but something like that, there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, there was an incident last year with Houston. Correa, the shortstop for Houston, and the second baseman, Altuve, I think it was Altuve, made it. They both ran out for the ball. I mean, they were running. Altuve had it. He was hit by Correa in a big collision. The ball fell out, and they gave him, it should have been a hit in my book. They gave him an error, which I don't think should have been.
Now, going back to the replays, of course, you've said that it makes the game a little bit longer, but when we think back about all the rhubarbs that, do you think it's helped in that regard?
Yes. Yes. You don't see many arguments.
Instead of the manager running out
correct.
There, now he takes his time and,
mm-hmm.
and strolls. And
but you see, they'll stand there for a couple minutes to see what their video guy says, you know, and then...
Then they'll challenge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it has cut down on arguing, I suppose.
It's yes, it thing. Has. Yeah. That it has.
And probably as a result, do you think that the umpire gains more respect as a result of that, or...?
Boy, I don't know, because a lot of calls here have been overturned. I mean, they're so obvious, and the umps will call them safe when they were out. Boy, I don't know about that one.
Do you have an opportunity to visit with the umpires regularly, or no?
No. Not once in a great while, but no.
They kind of have to stay by themselves as a class is. So, yeah. So, but they also then have to travel, and that's not something that you do a lot of.
No, but, you know, I would say about 10 years ago, they were talking about official scorers traveling to different cities, doing 162 games, and getting insurance. And I think they were going to start off at $50,000. I don't know whatever happened to that. Maybe they couldn't get many scorers to travel. Now me, I wouldn't have to have far to travel, but I'd have both teams here.
Yeah. And let's see, as a scorer, you have also done other things too when you worked with Elias before, when you weren't at the ballpark even. Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, yeah, I used to do some research for them. Like, they were big, well, they still are. When the Bulls first started in basketball, the box scores and all that, they would call, and I would have to read the whole thing to them before they had fax machines and that. And they would, and they're the ones, even in baseball, if there's a rule that we're not sure of, we got to call them, and they'll tell us what they think it should be, the rule and all that. So they're the big ones for most of the sports, especially baseball.
Now, you talked about the rules. How often do you have to consult a rule book?
You want my honest opinion?
I certainly do.
None.
You're not one of those fellas that reads it every December.
No. It, the only time I would look at it, if there's a pitch count, when a new pitcher comes in, if the count's 2-2, so I know who gets credit. But to be honest with you, no.
And how often have you seen that 2-2 count where the fellow's relieved?
Not very often. I mean, we had one the other day, it was 2-0. Now, if the guy walks, the previous pitcher is the one who gets charged with the walk. Anything besides the walk is to the relief pitcher.
And you've seen a lot of changes in baseball since you first started watching it. Is relief pitching the biggest change, do you think, or something else?
No, I would say the relief pitching. I think a lot of these teams, especially Francona, I mean, they could be winning 8-0, and he'll put a new pitcher in every inning, which is not really called for. And a lot of teams throwing, well, Ventura's gotten to the point. He's got to throw this guy in to pitch this inning, this guy this inning. Well, and no wonder the pitchers are tired. You don't need them every day. I think the biggest one is the relief pitching.
And now I see some teams are carrying a dozen or sometimes even more pitchers.
13 and, pitchers.
And you've only got, four bench players left, and it doesn't allow you much maneuvering.
No.
You don't see your double switch there that you don't like.
Well, you don't see that in the American League. No. Nationally, boy, let me tell you, at times I hate it because, first of all, you don't have much room in the first, second, or third position to put two, three, four pitchers. Now, last year, Madden used to have the pitcher bat eighth. And same when La Russa was managing the pitcher bat eighth. That was a joke.
Yeah. So you just have to supplement your scorecard and be creative at that point.
Right.
What's the one of the longest games that you can remember?
Oh, the, when was it, 1985, 84? The White Sox-Brewers 25-inning game. Comiskey Park, which the Sox won on a home run by Baines, a bomb at the 25th.
That was quite a ball game too. Yeah.
Yes, it was. The Brewers blew a couple leads. Anytime you thought they were dead, they came back.
Now, this yesterday in baseball, there was such a long rain delay in New York City.
That was today.
Yeah, today. And how do you talk about, can you talk about your feelings of rain delays? And
I don't like them. Not when you got to wait 3.5 hours. You know, the book states the umpire only has to wait on the first rain delay, 1 hour and 15 minutes. But it's gotten to a point where Major League Baseball wants every game finished.
To be 9 full innings.
That right. But to wait 3.5 hours? Oh, come on. I had a game here in the old ballpark in 19... I think that was also 90. 7 hours and 23 minute rain delay. They didn't even start the game. But the White Sox did not want to play the makeup game in Texas at that time. And eventually they did call it. 7 hours, 23 minutes.
Now, you had talked a little bit about the old ballpark. Can you talk about some of your memories from old Comiskey?
Oh, yeah, the disco night. And suddenly, I'll never... forget that. That was something else. I mean, because when the fans came in, they were supposed to give their records and then get a ticket for them. But for somehow, they all wound up with records. And the people did not know that it was a 20-night doubleheader, but they didn't know why the police weren't out there when all this started, because they were outside holding back the people who had season tickets were trying to get in. I mean, it was a real Donnybrook. And my late wife got a lot of great pictures with the fisheye lens that shows from left to right field with a fire up in right field upper deck and the big one in center field when they blew up all the records and it said, "Disco sucks." That was one of the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah, another promotion that didn't work out quite as planned. Yeah,
correct. It packed the place. The people came, but it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to.
Now, you mentioned your late wife. The two of you worked together for a long time for the Bulls, did you not?
Yes. She used to, when the visiting teams would come in, the radio people would ask for her to do the stats for RadioNet because she knew how to keep score for basketball and baseball.
And that had to be a special thing for you.
Yes.
Yeah. In terms of being, again, you'd mentioned your football career. Can you talk about the Bears for a little bit?
Yeah, I was with them 30 years. Once they remodeled Soldier Field in 03, and they put us in a southeast corner of the end zone, I said, I've had enough. Even with binoculars, you couldn't see. We used to be on the 40-yard line. But I did enjoy the 85 team when we had the 3 shutouts in a row in the playoffs. That was one of the best teams I've ever seen defensively.
And yet, one of the most revered characters from that ball club was Walter Payton.
Yes, and when he... had 275 yards against Minnesota and he beat OJ's record by 2 yards. They called me from Elias because they handle all the sports for all the teams. Did you make sure you got this right? I says, guys, I've been doing it that long. Yes, everything, it comes out to 275. Or when he broke, whose record was it for most yards? Was it Brown?
Oh, for a career?
Yeah. Yeah. But I still say, if Gale Sayers don't get hurt, he was one of the best. And I remember that game he scored 6 touchdowns against 49ers. They were in a 2-yard line. And John Arnett turned to the bench waving him in. And Hallis wouldn't let him in. He said he was afraid he'd get hurt. Because he scores there. It's the most touchdowns in a game by a player and the most points. Ernie Nevers had 40 points against the Bears.
Now, Nevers also played baseball, didn't he?
Yes. So I was really upset that they didn't put him back in there. But if he don't get hurt, he would have been one of the best.
Now, the old Soldier Field, they used to have the All-Star games.
Yes, college All-Star games.
And did you ever work any of those?
Yeah, the last 4. Because when I was with the Bears, they had us do those games. And, of course, the last one they called because it was pouring and fans were running on the field and all that.
How do you feel about all the exhibition games that we have to go through before the season starts in different sports?
Baseball, they're in Florida for a month. They need it. Hockey, they play, 4 or 5, and they're ready to play. Basketball is the same thing. I think you still need exhibition games, even in football.
Now, we used to, years and years ago, have the... The Sox would play the Cubs in a series at the end of the
Correct.
Season. Correct. And did you ever work on any of those?
Yeah, I worked the one when Michael played for the White Sox. And he played at Wrigley. He got the double to win the game. And some guy, who was it, with the Barrington team when Michael played there, he was bragging how he did Michael's baseball and basketball game, and I wrote him and I said, hey, that was minor league. This was major league up here, and I did both.
Now, you mentioned Michael Jordan. He has to be one of your favorite athletes of all time. Will you talk about your relationship with Michael?
Oh, Michael and I had a very good relationship. I used to do his scrapbook for him personally.
So, and how did that come about, Bob?
I used to do it for Norm Van Leer, Bob Love, Jerry Sloan, Borwinkle, and he was talking to them one day. And Bob Love told him, yeah, I would do it, and he took care of me very well.
Now, you talked about your scrapbooks. We're going to talk about some of the scrapbooks that you've kept and maintained over the years.
Well, I'm the only one that really has the Bulls since day one. They didn't start keeping a scrapbook till 84. And I had these 19 by 23s. And from the first 7 years I have in these big scrapbooks. And then I fell behind. I just cut out the newspaper clippings and all that. But then in 03, 04, when they were bad, I stopped. The only thing I would keep now are when I work a game or something, put the clippings in there, and then Bulls didn't want it. Hey, I threw out all the others, but the scrapbooks I have the first 7 years.
Okay, and you've also got all the scorecards that you've...
Yes, yeah. Every event that I've gone to, football, basketball, soccer, hockey, if I went or worked, I've gotten the program, the ticket stub if I wasn't working for the team, and then the newspaper clippings with the stats from each game. And same if I go to a concert. I get the program, put the stub in there, and then the reviews.
Now, you've never had to keep score, though, at a concert, have you?
No.
All right. Any other memories that or especially stand out that you'd like to share?
No, I think we just about covered almost everything. In all the years I've done it, I've been one of the lucky people to do what I want to do.
And again, I think that's the joy too. When we come to a ballpark, the clubs that you seem to enjoy playing, those are the teams that we really identify with. Some of the fellows just seem to be going through the motions in some occasions, and we're going to talk about that a little bit.
I forgot one thing, that I did get a ring each year from the Bulls, so I got all 6 rings, and they're exactly like the players. And I'm proud of that.
Why don't you talk about Jerry Reinsdorf a little
bit? Oh, Jerry is one of the greatest guys you could ever meet. He takes care of his employees very well. There can't be, I don't care what people, you hear people say this about Jerry, that's BS. Jerry will do anything for you and anything you need. Like, he couldn't give me a ring for the White Sox because there's a conflict of interest because I get paid by Major League Baseball. But he gave me a watch, like the players got ahead, about 30, 32 diamonds, and had it engraved and all. He just told me not to wear it to the ballpark, so he was getting in trouble.
And out of all the owners that you have worked for or been associated with, then you would say?
The best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Lee Stern from the Sting was very nice, too.
Now, you haven't always had perfect relationships with all sports owners, have you?
You know, I don't think I've ever had a problem with any of them.
Okay, what about, say, like with the Wirtz family with your scorebooks?
No, never had a problem.
Good.
No, I've never had a problem. You know, people would say, well, this guy is so-and-so. You know, if people treat me nice, I treat them nice. And I treat them the way they treat me. But you know, you get people say, well, this guy's no good, and that only because they were bad. But me, all the owners, I never had a problem, knock on wood.
And again too, do you find that being a fan gets in the way of being a scorer ever or not?
Well, first of all, the Bulls, you can't get excited down there. Here I can because I'm by myself, where the other scorers are in the press box next to the people. Bears were the same one we could get excited, and same with the Blackhawks. But basketball, I'm down there on the court where everybody can see you. No.
Now.